You're listening to Red Nation Online.
Using that speed, and then the challenge occurs.
Sunday, March 15th. It's Julian Zadorozny and I'm Ian Clark. Some questions and concerns from week one revealed themselves in a 2-0 loss to the Columbus Crew. Of course, Dave Ganter, again, has a direct hand in a negative TFC result. We discuss the straight red, defensive lapses, and finish off with a segment on Jovinko, as Julian's longtime passion for Serie A has him very familiar with the Italian DP, and he offers his thoughts on what he's seen so far and how successful he'll be with TFC. All this and more in the next 45 minutes on Eastside Stand Up.
I don't know how I wanted to start it off in terms of what would the tagline or the motto be for this week's podcast. I don't know if it's fair. I think some people might feel like crashing down to reality.
Right.
But I think one of the things that we could start off this podcast with, Julian, is framing that a little more realistically, because we talked about it in last week's podcast and framed the win. And, a 3-1 scoreline wasn't, I think, indicative of actually how the game played out. And so if we extrapolate it and people listen to last week's podcast, I think they would sort of say, we use the word cautious optimism. We saw things of concern from last week, off the hop. What were your thoughts? What were your thoughts on, because I haven't talked to you since then. What were your thoughts on last week's game and your thoughts of what Toronto was up against this week in Columbus?
Well, I think defensively is the big word here. And I think you can see that, especially in when it comes to the goals and what happened last week. 45 minutes of basically pushing forward. TFC was really pushing for a goal, I thought, in the first 45 minutes, referencing Vancouver. And the fact that they could have gone down 2-0 in the first 45 minutes. And I think they were saved by basically playing way better in the second half. And then you had that, dynamic of Jovinko and Altidore. And I think that second half was basically, if you saw that second half, you thought, oh, TFC are playing fantastic, playing great. But it wasn't indicative. And I think of their style of play. And I think if you push two forward and try, and that's something you do when you're tied 2-2 and you're at like 10 minutes left in the game, 3 in the back. That's what it looked like to me half the time. And a lot of the long balls in the first half, Vancouver, they really caught them napping. And if you're comparing that game with this game, absolutely the same thing. So what happened is that it happened in 90 minutes, not 45 minutes, where basically you saw, obviously we'll break everything down, but there's so many instances where, the defense were just napping, allowing strikers and forwards to get behind them. I mean, Kai Kamara for Columbus, it speaks for itself that, he just found space when there shouldn't have been.
Yeah.
And it happened like that in the first 45 minutes. The difference is that Vancouver had, it was the first game of the season. Everybody's rusty, so you have a break. But, and they didn't make them suffer for it when they probably should have. And if this game, if Vancouver and Toronto happened 4 months from now, they would have suffered for it. They got their bearings back in the second half, and Jovinko played fantastic, and Altidore played fantastic, and Bradley dominated the midfield, and anyway, so, I think when you play against Higuain and Kamara coming back, those guys will make you pay for it.
Yeah, I thought too, we said this again last week, was that, Vancouver, I thought, in a way, shut off in the second half. And right. that was, the second half was, I thought, a little bit more about Vancouver's play than necessarily Toronto running them over. And for me, that was a concern, because I just knew, just based on the history of Toronto and Columbus, that odds are against Columbus at home putting in a sleeper or not showing up to that game and not putting in a full shift. And that was something that I said, this is something for us to watch, how Toronto copes against a team that's going to play a full 90 minutes and not just sort of dump their tank in the first 45.
Right.
And if we look at these two teams, and even, you know, Steve Botcher, you know, sent in, he did the preview for this week's game on Red Nation Online. And I first read and I was like, ooh, Steve, like bold calling for a Columbus win. And, but mm-hmm. when you read some of his things, you know, the two games that I thought was interesting was that when you looked at Toronto and Vancouver and Columbus, I think it was losing to Houston, both those results didn't tell the whole story. Columbus had, you know, something like 20 shots on goal or over 20 shots on goal and, you know, towards goal. And that was something to highlight. And he highlighted that. And of course, in this game, Columbus had 21 shots with seven on target. And that said a lot. And we looked at, you know, how this game was set up. And of course, you have two teams that have, you know, one that spent tons of money and one that's been a little more frugal. But, you know, when you look at that, you say, you know, Kai Kamara, Higuain, and you have a midfielder or a striker with, you know, Justin Miram, Finley and Trapp, and then Parkhurst in the back. I mean, that's a solid spine of, I would say, you know, upper MLS level talent that, that, you know, sometimes can stand toe to toe with some of these guys that are worth $6 million a year or something like that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think in the first half, it was pretty even for a while. I think when you had guys like Caldwell and, you know, Creville and, you know, one more was playing defensively. I mean, I thought they could go toe to toe with, what's his name, Pogatetz and Parkhurst and those guys. So, I mean, I thought it was pretty even in the first 45 minutes. But it really, you know, and obviously it changed after Moore got sent off. But, you know, I thought they played very well. And if you look at possession at the end of the game, it's 60-40. I mean, you know, when you have guys like Altidor, Osorio, who's been playing well, you know, I didn't see Robbie Finley that whole game. I mean, you need guys to possess the ball, and you're not winning games by that margin.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, that's the thing that I would have said too. I thought the first half in this game was obviously much more balanced than the last one against Vancouver. And that might have something to say about Columbus, you know, with Higuain pulling the strings, you know, kind of like a wily veteran. You know, maybe their approach was a little more like, you know what, like, don't worry, it's a 90-minute game. We don't need to be up 2-0 within the first 20 minutes. And I think that, of course, favors Toronto because they're trying to find their footing as well. I did think, though, that if we just look at the first half in terms of how the play rolled out, you know, I agree. I thought Toronto looked better than last week, but I still thought that Columbus had more dangerous chances on goal. You could see things where it just was like their finishing wasn't clinical. I mean, you saw that play with Kamara against Caldwell, like in the seventh minute, where Caldwell just couldn't close him down in the 6-yard box, and Kamara just kind of turned and put the shot right on Bendik. And you're like, whoa, that was
the 6 minute, right?
Yeah,
I wrote down the six minute Kamara alone. He was unmarked, totally unmarked.
Yeah,
Caldwell was. I wrote a note saying that, you know, in the 29th minute, I mean, he needed to make himself bigger and press because he allowed way too much space. And it's kind of like, I mean, if you got the opposing team coming in, I mean, you want to cut down their space. You want to make sure that happens. So if you're allowing them, especially players love Kamara's talent, they just made him suffer for it in the second half. It just showed. And then Caldwell came off. I'm not quite sure why.
He was injured
in the first half.
He was injured.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he didn't pull through. And that's in them. Just to say that too, is that, you know, that I thought Caldwell did struggle in that first half. A couple times he looked like he just didn't have that step, you know, to close guys down and really fight the physical battle. And that's, of course, been, I mean, we've already kind of highlighted it, and I think we'll probably talk about it again, but I think that is emerging right now. If you agree, Julian, that defending is the big concern right now. We thought it would be at the start of the year about how durable a Caldwell-Perkey partnership would be. And then you look at really the right back situation. I mean, Morrow, I think, is solid at left. But then you sort of have question marks of how much better Bloom can be this year and how well Creval can transition into the right back position. And we saw that last week he struggled. And I would say this week he struggled a bit as well.
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't know. I mean, defensively, it's just like a constant theme with this team. I mean, a good defense, you know, is your best offense, right? I mean, it's just having strong guys, not allowing play to happen, not allowing big name players. I mean, this is against Columbus. I mean, against Vancouver, even though it had the same problem, I thought they did a better job in defending in the second half. But I mean, when players of that sort of quality you know, I mean, when they play Real Salt Lake next and they play, you know, they go forward, I mean, each team is going to be different. But I think if you have a solid group, at least, I mean, my thing is that with Caldwell, my feeling is that he got shipped to the captaincy. And, you know, I thought he did a better job last season. I mean, this is obviously just two games. But I think that, you know, you want one guy, one solid defender to basically be the captain of those four guys or how many guys are back there. He's basically making everybody work. And you don't have that. You know, Caldwell usually is very good at being vocal. And I didn't see any of that. I mean, it's obviously in the first half, but I haven't seen that kind of energy that he had last season. So, you know, with Criavo and those guys, you know, I think Caldwell is the stronger out of that D. But if he's not pulling his weight and he's allowing, I mean, even to use an example of Aldridge coming back in the second half, I mean, he began to play defense. I mean, you know, if even one of your top strikers or offensive midfielders is working real hard and has, it seems like he has no faith in that back line, it's frightens me because there's a lot of games left and you're on the road for a bit. So they're going to have to really come up with some courage and just work together. And I didn't see that at all in those 90 minutes.
And I think that actually segues well, because of course we said that, you know, probably the one reliable guy from a defensive standpoint is Justin Morrow. And probably the biggest talking point of this game. And it's been, you know, it was a talking point all last year. And a funny thing is that it does get a bit tiring because it comes up almost every other game. You know, mm-hmm. lamenting the refereeing, and you look at the list, and you're like, oh, Dave Ganter, and then you see Soren Stoika's involved, or even a game when Soren Stoika's the lead guy, and Baldomir Toledo, and it's like there's really like one or two referees in the league that you can kind of breathe a sigh of relief, and here we are again, and if I remember correctly, and the listeners can tell me if I was wrong, I think the last time we saw Mr. Ganter at his best, in quotes. If you remember, I think I referenced it last week, the game where, you know, Gilberto was going one-on-one with defender and he toe-poked the ball in for the winning goal and he got called as a foul on it. I think, I mean, if I'm not mistaken, that was a Gantar game because I remember Michael Bradley just losing his shit all over him.
Ripping it.
Yeah.
Even Garber, even the commissioner of the MLS said that was a joke.
Yeah.
When the guy that's supposed to be defending refs goes out and says, "You did a terrible job, sir," and you got it. And the fact that this guy, he hasn't refed very much. So this was, he was rusty in this game as well.
Yeah. And I think it's the funny thing that I thought of too. It's like, you watch these MLS referees in plays like this, and I'm starting to think to myself, I'm like, do I know the rules? Do I know the rules? Like, who's, you know, it's like, and the problem is that this is another frustrating part of this is you watch that play breakdown where Morrow's coming in from the left back position and he's sliding across and getting the ball. And he has to go consult with the guy. Like, think of it like this, like rationally, he had to look through Morrow's back essentially. To have made the right call.
Didn't he give the card to the wrong guy? He gave it to
Ganter. Gave it to the wrong guy. But Ganter went to his assistant. Now it wasn't like the play was coming from the opposite side, so like the referee could see it in front of him. He was looking at the back, so he wouldn't have seen that Morrow got the ball first, right?
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
So that was to me that was an issue that he was relying so heavily on this guy's opinion to make that final call. And of course it's a guy who always gets the call wrong. And then of course, you know, you can, I was watching it on, I watched it on MLS Live and like, you know, a yellow card would have been fair. And I think everyone would have thought that, but of course that's never seems to be the way that it goes. And, as much as I am highly critical of Toronto FC, the way they play, their signings, etc., you know, you can kind of make a case. And there was results last year in a game like this. Mm-hmm. You know, I thought of last year, there was that game against the Chicago Fire where Luke Moore was sent off. Again, that game that we mentioned with Ganter where Gilberto's goal was called back, where these referees are making decisions, they're getting them wrong, that are costing the team points. I don't want to totally peg it on it, but it does get tiring and it's, you just don't know what else to say. You're just like, you know, you look at the way the second half, we get in the second half out of that, you know, Morgan comes in, who as I like Ashton Morgan, but obviously he hasn't been playing.
You know what?
Right? He's been in a black hole for the last year.
It looked like he was in a black hole playing for 45 minutes. I've never seen a guy play so miserably. I mean, he played miserably. And that you know, let's look at the guys that came on up. Osorio comes on, Morgan comes on. Jovinko came on, but Warner.
Hagelin for Caldwell. Jovinko,
but I was going to mention Hagelin for Caldwell. Changed everything.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that can't be dismissed. Because if your desk is Ashton Morgan, and that's the reference I made when Altidore comes back, he's like, buddy, you need help. I'm going to come and help you. And then he got schooled. I mean, it's like, you can't have a team based on just your starting 11 every week, because guys are going to get injured. And if you need depth on the bench, that's what you should spend your money on as well. Not only top name guys playing, oh, I got Jovinko and Altidore, fantastic. Who do you got to replace them if those guys get injured? Who's going to score the goals? Who's going to defend? Who's going to hold that line? And Morgan looked as if, you know, his puppy had died or something. And he looked absolutely, oh, where do I go? So it's like, and the mistakes made were calculable. And, you know, it seemed to permeate throughout the team. It seemed just to really permeate when those two guys came on. Hagelin, I think, played probably better defensively. But then again, I mean, you know, those two goals.
There might as well be nobody there. Yeah, I especially thought of that. But the first, they were almost identical.
Higuain seemed as if he just was in heaven when Morgan came on. It was a little, like, he just played way better. And I felt that they were calculated. Like, that first 45 was Columbus going, okay, let's see what they got. And then the second half, okay, they've lost a man. Now we're going to pick him apart. Now we know what their weaknesses are. And then Morgan comes on and they just took over.
Yeah, and I think that's something that, you know, as we, you know, extract things from this game, and I look at how, you know, we want, you know, you got a question and you want to ask, how far is Toronto coming from last year to improve and make their chances better? And that was something that we saw last season too, is that Toronto was a very easy team to attack because they would just sit deep and you had lots of space to operate. The defensive pressure at times wasn't very high, and the verdict was out on how to beat Toronto FC. It was like, you know what, their four defenders are going to sit deep. You're going to have plenty of time and space to like run through channels and get in angles and whatnot, and they won't pressure you on the cross, or they won't pressure you from long range. We saw that. Mm-hmm. You know, the one game that comes to mind was the New England game where they were scoring those goals from like 25 yards out, unmolested. Yeah. And then if we look at this game, you know, it was like around the 57th minute, and there, and your boy Ashton Morgan there, you know, he kind of, you know, he keeps his guy from, you know, pushing further down the wing, but it still gave him enough space. I think it was Finley to cross in a ball, and then Justin Miram is a guy that I was, you know, through that game, you could see that Justin Miram had, you know, some good skills, and he was starting to get some chances for himself, and it was a big number nine, and you're thinking, man, it could be just a matter of time before this guy gets what he needs. And there it was. Mm-hmm. And I think this is, you know, if we want to circle back a little bit, you know, you're talking about Caldwell, and it's like, yeah, you know what? If Caldwell goes down, you know, you're left with Hagelin and Eric Zavaleta, who are both in their early 20s. That I just don't think, I just don't think when they're, you know, it just feels like when it comes down to it, when it's, you know, really gritty, that, you know, they'll fold. And I think we saw that in these two goals that came like boom, boom, back to back. The same goal from Kamara, which came from the other side. Francis coming down the left side. And that was one that was really tough to swallow, because you saw this play opening up, and it was Perkey, Hagelin, and Morgan, and no one was marked.
They're not tracking back, and that's what I'm on. They're not tracking. They're not running. No one's running. They're standing still. I mean, you got to track these guys. This is your job. This is your job. This is what you're out there. If you're playing deep and trying to defend, well, then show it. Because that, I think it was the Kamara goal, the second goal. He was literally all alone.
Yeah,
and you saw three defenders basically looking at him, going, "Wow, that looks like fun." I mean, he's really doing a good job. I mean, no one, and then you even saw little shards of it in the first half, as we had mentioned before, Kamara being alone and unmarked, and Caldwell not doing his job. And I just think it's consistent. And so, you know, when you're allowing crosses to come in, you're allowing Higuain to make massive runs. I mean, just, you know, it's like, get out of my way. And, you know, if your back line isn't able to contain that, at least press, especially on the wings, and show that you can fight these guys and you know, at least allow them like to push forward, and then okay, you can't make any space. He's gotta come all the way back to the midfield, he's gotta start cycling the ball, he's gotta start, well, let me try him in the midfield. If you allow them that much space, they're just gonna go on the wing and make crosses and allow guys like Kamara to do what he does best, to score goals. It's telling because, I mean, it's one game, but I mean, holy, I mean, if this is what we expect, I mean, you need work. They need work. They need to really sit down and work it all out.
Well, then that's a perfect segue then, because everyone knows, the game ends 2-0. I don't know if like how you would like, let's discuss it. How would we frame this result, Julian?
Like frame it like in like comparative to the last game, or just sort of like
just frame like how do you what's forward. The takeaway from the game? How do you leave? Like, do we walk away from this to be like, okay, you know what, lesson learned? You know how we started off this podcast saying, you know, what is the reality of where this team is right now? I don't think we should be, you know, obviously people were really buoyed after winning in Vancouver, but again on this podcast we were cautious. And we said
that. But if you watched the game, you would be cautious, exactly.
Yeah, and I think, you know, as we come out of this, we say, you know, a lot of the things that we were cautious about revealed themselves in this game. A lot of things that we raised as questions in the season previews revealed themselves in this game. And I think if that's it, and I always like, you know, it comes across like we're being critical, but I think it's just a matter of, you know, you have to say these things so that when it happens, you're not like, oh my God.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's only one, look, it's game two. Okay, so it's game two. All right, you're going to lose some games. And let's be honest here. You know, this is not, you know, this, we're not having this conversation in June or July. Hopefully not. August. Where, you know, so you have time. What about you? Do you have time? They have time to work this out. They have time to figure it out. And, you know, it's maybe some jitters. Young guys come on. They're going to. So, I mean, I don't want to be too negative, you know. You know, if which is, you know, one of my personal traits, but I don't read too negative about the team. But you know, I think there were some positives, but I think all in all, defensively is where, I mean, I saw that in the last game. So really, I think offensively, I mean, we could talk about the offense. There really wasn't much. But if you want to goal, you know, chances were made, but you know, there were few and far between, right? 11 shots, 3 on net. So I think it's. I want to be cautious. I want to go, okay, you know, Caldwell's going to get back into it. Hopefully the injury isn't too severe. You know, I think that you'll have those guys once they're a little healthier, once they've played more games together, I think they'll come up with a system that will work for them. And you're 4 in the back, you know, and you don't want to play too deep. You don't want to play too forward like they did 45 minutes against Vancouver, but this is all learning. And I think they'll get it. I think they'll play. My hope is that they'll play way better in Salt Lake, but they're traveling. And it's all on the road, right? So you have to basically put that into consideration that, you know, not, you know, you're not going to have any home games for a bit.
Yeah. And I think that's the thing is to, you know, for the listeners and, you know, there's people who, you know, we have a pretty dedicated audience that would have heard in the season preview, you know, Aaron Nielsen outlined, you know, when you look at this, he said where he thinks Toronto is going to finish. And I thought Toronto is this year still going to be fighting for those like last playoff spots. He thought they're going to be better, but the teams that he highlighted that were going to be tough teams this year and probably might be better than Toronto FC was Columbus was one of them. And Chicago was another. And those are, you know, we have Chicago in two matches from now. So the opening seven games or six or seven games we have on the road are going to be very tough. And it's going to make it tougher that, you know, last year we had maybe a little bit of an excuse, not an excuse, but a reason that, you know, you had Jermaine Defoe coming into the league and Michael Bradley. And I think we caught a couple teams with their pants down.
Right.
But this season, even though you don't know what to expect from Altidore and Jovinko, teams still know, like, this is Toronto FC. Like, they obviously they've spent some money on some high quality players. Like, we're not going to be, we know what to expect this season, even though it's different players. We know where they've upgraded and we should know what to expect. And I don't think we're going to get that surprise factor as much this season. So what we're left with is, you know, we're going to have to look at the coaching staff and how well they prepare this team from game to game and how well, you know, we strategize and set up our tactics from match to match to take on specific opponents. You know, we saw last year that we looked great in those first two games and then we went to Rail Salt Lake. And because Salt Lake you know, played a different formation than the teams we're up against, they just tooled us.
Yeah.
Toronto just looked foolish against Real Salt Lake last year. Mm-hmm. So that's, and so we know what the, we know what they play in Real Salt Lake, sort of like a modified 4-3-3, or if you want to call it like a, you know, 4-2-3-1 or 4-1-3-2 or whatever, that's where you're going to have four channels or four rows of players to deal with instead of three. And that's something that we need to consider when we go into there and not just walk on the field and say, you know, this is our team, this is what we got. But the one thing I'll say, Julian, that, you know, we can maybe walk out of this game from is, you know, you had criticism, Morgan, we had questions about Hagelin. If we know if Caldwell is going to be injured and not, and of course we know Morrow's out, at least we have two weeks to repair, because we have next weekend off.
Yeah.
And Real Salt Lake's there. So there shouldn't be an excuse after the Real Salt Lake game that we look poor, because we would have had 2 weeks to actually specifically focus in on that match.
You know, I mean, yeah, it's all good points. I mean, you know, you're basically, but I mean, the thing is, I mean, if you're not learning from your mistakes, you were going to have a season like the last 9 seasons or 8 seasons. You know, I mean, that's the point. I mean, you want to be able to learn from these mistakes. If you can't do that, and we saw that last season, 2 seasons ago, I mean, this is just, you have a lot of history. TFC has a lot of history of failure, and it's a ghost, man. It seeps into, into the locker room. I mean, you can't escape it. I'm sure, you know, over time, you know, the players know the history, and they have a lot of pressure on them. So, you know, I mean, first two games, okay, that's fine. But, you know, you're going to have to learn from the mistakes made, you know, not giving everybody enough space to score a lot of goals. You know, and putting goals in yourself. I mean, you know, I feel that this game, they should have at least popped one in. But I didn't like Altidore in that game. I thought Giovinco did too much work. I think he worked really hard. And, he's very good with the ball. And he's very good at passing. He's very good at setting up plays. And I just felt that, you know, Altidore wasn't in it. I wish he had actually come off. And I didn't like the fact that Vanny had ultimately left them both. I mean, Giovinco came off, but I think Altidore should have come off besides Giovinco. I think Altidore had a very rough game. I just didn't find space, you know, and he wasn't really, he wasn't as flamboyant and as he didn't make himself as big as he did the last game against Vancouver. And, you know, I think he's going to have to be more consistent. I mean, that being said, it's two games, but his consistency has to go up. You know, Giovinco's consistency was just as good as the first game. I thought Bradley played very well as well. So if you want to talk about the midfield, you know, Bradley played well, Cherry played well.
Yeah.
A lot of these guys, you know, I mean, it's unfortunate, but the defense is pretty much what lost the game for them, because I thought the midfield played well. And I thought, because I think defensively Columbus, Parkhurst and Francis and those guys, you know, I thought they did a good job trying to keep, I mean, the thing is, like, I made a note about Giovinco, because I felt that, you know, he was using his body a lot, and, you know, he's very small, right? So, you know, but he was drawing a lot of fouls because of it, and I think he could utilize that, and you know, I think he did that in the 38th minute, and he did a very good job in you know, allowing, you know, his talent is to, you know, dead ball situations. So, unfortunately, he couldn't sink any of them in, but I thought he played very well for 86 minutes or whatever.
Yeah, I thought despite the result, there was still some positives in terms of performance-wise. Like, again, you said Cheru, I thought, I don't want to call him a surprise, because we highlighted him that he could be one of the key players this year, but his passing is really good. I mean, he has some, he has a nice touch when he's, like, you know, putting the ball. He was fine, that in the first half, there was a nice ball he lifted over into the 18-yard box that Giovinco latched onto, and you're just like, yeah, that's what we need to see more of. I thought Osorio still played good. The only thing I thought was, I like Finley for his pace and he's able to handle the league, but technically I don't think he's the guy I want to see crossing the ball in. You know, that final ball lets him down. But I wanted to segue, I mean, you obviously talked to him a bit, and one of the reasons why obviously I brought you on this, Julian, is because of your longtime passion for Italy's Serie A and how closely you follow that league. And I thought it was appropriate.
I thought it was my good look.
Yeah. People think Zadorozny is Ukrainian, but it's Zadorozny. Zadorozny.
My actual first name is Enzo. Gianfranco.
And that's the thing, is that I wanted to, because you would have obviously been I'm sure, very familiar with him through most of his career.
Oh, yeah.
Following the league, yeah. You know, more than myself as just like a casual. I mean, I would have heard of who he was. Juventus has this little guy who's supposed to be quite good. That, you know, and I kind of loosely followed him through like Italy's national team, but not on a week-to-week basis. And I thought it might be interesting to kind of just hear some of your thoughts on, you know, where he came from, you know, what made him successful, and then coming to MLS, and what could make him successful here, and, you know, sort of the initial impressions you have of his play and what needs to happen for him to be a superstar.
Well, I mean, he's a superstar anyway. I mean, he's already a superstar as far as I'm concerned. And, you know, I also like to point out that I'm a Lazio fan. So, I mean, you know, Lazio for life, so for 15 years or so. So, I mean, you know, I've been following the league since the early 2000s because my wife is from Lazio. Her background's, her family's from Lazio. So I wanted to follow a team. So I picked Lazio. So I've been following the league, and it's one of the most exciting, entertaining leagues you can watch, I think, you know, because it's so dramatic. But that being said, I mean, Giovinco has been, I mean, he's a Juventini. I mean, he's all Juventus. His love for Juve goes back because, let's face it, he was born in Turin. Not many guys are Torino fans. I mean, they are Torino fans, but if you're a fan, I mean, Juventus has a fan base all over the world. So, I mean, when I went to see Rome play, Italy, Lazio play in Rome, excuse me, I was at the hotel and the guy goes to me, he goes, who do you follow? And I said, Lazio. He goes, why? And he's a Juventus fan. I mean, Juventus is just all over. So, you know, he's born in Turin. That's his team. He's in the Juventus youth system. And, you know, he played for Juve briefly. I mean, his stats are basically, you know, he played for Juventus. He played 93 games for Juventus and scored 14 goals. You know, his size, I think, has a lot to do with the fact that he's very fast. And I think, you know, he's an attacking midfielder. He can play very well as a second striker. And I think his my favorite time of Giovinco, the team that I think he played the best with, was Parma. And we all know what's going on with Parma now, but I mean, this is telling of what happens in Italy, you know, economically. You know, football in Italy is all about economics, social economics, and obviously economics regarding for sport. So, you know, if the country's making money, the teams are making money. Nobody goes to a lot of the games in Italy, which is unfortunate, unless, you know, Juve is playing, or Inter, or Milan, or any of those big clubs. Most people would rather stay at home and watch the game. But when he played for Parma, and at that time, he played two seasons for Parma, and he was on loan, and there was a 50-50 loan deal with Juventus. And he played 66 games for Parma, and he scored 22 goals. And he also was on loan for Empoli, but only played 35 games and scored 6 goals. But he scored 28 goals with 101 games between both those squads. And for Juve, only 14 goals, 93 games. His talent is that when he plays 90 minutes, he's absolutely fantastic. And you can see that playing with TFC. So I make a comparison. I make a comparison with TFC now and Parma. Because when he played for Parma, he played 90 minutes. He played with players that he wouldn't have played with Juventus. Now, Juventus, having the money that they do and having the players, he would have played with Pirlo, he would have played with Buffon, he would have played with, I think at the time, Quagliarella. These are amazing players. But because I think this kind of goes back to the conversation we had about depth. When you have depth on the pitch for the starting 11, and you have tons of depth on the bench, it's hard to find a place. And I think Giovinco couldn't find his place. And the reason he got called up to the national team is because of his style of play for Parma, which was attacking, which was playing men off the ball, making passes, scoring goals. And if you don't do that for Juve, you have two guys that will take your spot. So a lot of guys want to play for Juventus, but they don't have the chops. And it's sad because he is a Juventini at heart. He was born in Turin. He just has that, you know, he's even reading interviews. He's like, oh, I'm all about Juve. You know, people that think I don't deserve to play for Juve, well, you know, forget them. But the reality is that you can't play with big squads if you're not a Pirlo or a guy that can, you know, or Del Piero. I mean, you know, he tried to be Del Piero when he played for Juventus, but, you know, he's a number 10, right? You know, and you can't replace Del Piero. So when you have guys, when you play for Parma, I mean, the goal scoring was absolutely, absolutely fantastic. So he played for TFC. Coming to the MLS is probably the best thing for him because now, I mean, he could have gone anywhere. He could have gone to play for Sassuolo, which is an amazing team, which is the team of Italy, as far as I'm concerned. They have so many great players on there. He could have gone back to Empoli and played for Empoli with Macaroni and those guys. He could have done all that stuff, but he came to MLS. And I think this is this is TFC is Padma of North America or of the MLS, because he's able, I think he's playing as well. And this is the first two games. He's going to play as well. He's going to score a lot of goals. He's going to get his goal. You had basically coaching, even the coaching staff is very similar, because when he played for Padma, he was coached by a guy named Pasquale Marino and Franco Colombo. Now, both those guys had very limited playing. They played in Italy and they played a bit. But Greg Vanney is very similar. So I think he gets the best out of smaller named coaches. I mean, that's just a theory, but I do feel that he's going to play the best he did since he played for Padma. So, I mean, he's going to score goals. I think the history is very similar as well. You know, Padma is this sort of, you know, this mid-table team, and TFC is this kind of mid-table team, and they're coming. When he came to Padma,
that was very generous of you.
At a rough. Well, you know what I mean. I mean, if I'm compared, look, Toronto FC, if they're playing in Serie A, they'd be in Serie C Uno. You know, they'd be in, you know, be in Liga Pro right now. But I mean, I'm using as a comparison. I'm being kind, but I mean, if I'm taking the situation that TFC is in now and having Giovinco come in, I mean, it's very similar to the time when he came to play for Padma, and they needed him, and he scored goals. It's uncanny. So, I mean, obviously, if we have a conversation at the end of this season, maybe I'll be right, maybe I'll be wrong. But I think he's healthy. He's a good idea. He plays very well. He scores goals. And I think it's going to be interesting to see after this season whether or not I'm right. So, I think both teams are very similar in that regard. And you know, if he can get the best out of him, and he's still pretty young. When he played for Padma, he was tops. And I think I see flashes of that. I see flashes of that. You know, his goal-scoring prowess, his ability to shoot far from far off. You know, don't let the size, his demeanor to size, don't let it fool you. I think the best will come out of him.
Yeah.
You know, if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. It's fascinating to me that, you know, I was just kind of, because that was my favorite time to watch him. And you see it now. I think he's enjoying himself. I think he's. I don't know how he's able to communicate with anybody on the pitch. But he doesn't speak English, so I don't know what he's saying to those guys when he's talking to them. But you know, I think just watching games like yesterday, when he's just, you know, he has the ball, he plays the ball off to another to whoever's making runs. He's best when he played for Padma. He's best when he's carrying the ball and he's allowing, especially if he's playing with another striker. And I think that's why Altidore and the Arthur Giovinco combo can be so enticing, because you'll be able to have two guys that play off each other and, you know, and score a lot of goals. So, you know, that's the hope. So I'm hoping that he'll play as many games and score as many goals. But when he went back to Juventus, you know, and it's the same thing happened. When he went back to Juventus, he couldn't play. Antonio Conte never played him. And it's, you know, he played some Coppa Italia matches and whatnot, but you know, he needs to play 90 minutes, and he did that at Padma. He did that at Empoli as well. But you know, when you play 101 games, and most of them are 90 minutes, and you're scoring two goals at a time, you know, that shows something. And you know, and at the same time, I don't know if I mentioned it already, but he played with like Hernan Crespo, and he played with Valery Bolyanov, a Bulgarian player who plays for Kanana now on Serie B. But at the time, I mean, those two. I mean, to me, Valery Bolyanov is Altidore. And you know, we don't have a Hernan Crespo, obviously, but I think he's able, as soon as he's able to play and get in sync with somebody, I think you're going to see the best out of him. And I think it's the best decision TFC has made in a long time. And you know, and he's very humble when he speaks in interviews. He's, you know, and I think he's gonna work hard, and that's what you need. You know, that's when you need a guy that can mimic that, and I hope he does, and more. I hope he scores a lot of goals.
You said that, and you also said you know, mentioned the language barrier, but he does have a teammate who spent some time in Italy. Yeah, you're mentioning before.
Yeah, Michael Bradley, and it's fun fact time. Michael Bradley played for the Flying Donkeys, Chievo. There's two teams in Verona. There's Hellas and Chievo, and the reason they have the name Flying Donkeys because they said that it would take flying donkeys. Donkeys would fly before Chievo, they ever got into Serie A, and they got into Serie A that season. So they have the donkeys with wings on their crest. But Michael Bradley played for I don't know how good his Italian is, but he played for Chievo, and they actually played against each other, which is kind of interesting. They played on September the 18th, 2011. Bradley, Chievo played Padma, and Giovinco scored two goals, and they beat him 2-1. And Bradley came on in the 71st minute. And then they played February the 5th, 2012, and Padma beat him on the same score line, 2-1, and Giovinco scored in the 46th minute, and Bradley played all 90. all 90 minutes. I think, you know, just a quick point. Like, I think Bradley, I think he played very well for Kiev. And then he went to, you know, that terrible team in Rome. And, you know,
what are they called?
Those whores. The whores. Well, I have many monikers for, for Rome. I have many names for Turin as well, for Juve. But yeah, I mean, I want nothing but to see Roma not succeed. So, but he went to Rome and, you know, and he played okay as well. But I mean, he had a good time in Italy, I thought. But anyway, Bradley, it was a good experience for him. And I don't know if he liked it or not, but, you know, he only played a season there, and then Rome only played a season, and then he came to TSC. So, you know, good for us. But yeah, they played twice against each other, which I thought was interesting. And now they play on the same team, which is, I mean, Bradley and Jovinko has, I think it's going to be, they're going to have a lot of time together, and they're going to find the nuances of their play. And I think both of them will definitely get the best out of each other. I think Jovinko, my main point is that Jovinko brings the best out of a lot of players. That good time, that golden age of his, you know, can be repeated. And he doesn't have an ego. You know, he loves to play, and if you give him the time, I think he should play 90 minutes every game.
Yeah.
I don't think he should come off. I don't think he should have come off against Vancouver. But, I mean, I think it seems to me that Vanny has seen the tape and knows the history of Sebastian Jovinko, and I think he's able to, it looks like he's replicating it, and he's showing that he's capable of just pushing him forward. And, you know, and a lot of players are going to have a hard time keeping track of him. And I think the last game it's not indicative of how well he can play, but I thought he's one of the better players. So, yeah. So, I mean, Jovinko definitely, you know, as long as he has a good season this year, I mean, hopefully he'll stay at TFC longer than a season. You know, it'd be nice to see him play for 2-3 years here. And I think he can do it. I think the league is perfect for him. And that's another reason why I compare him to Parma, because you get guys like this quality that when you give them a chance to shine a little bit, and it's not, you know, they're not repressed like they are bigger squads. I mean, we don't have a Juventus here. You know, there is no Juventus in Canada, in the MLS. You know, you can say Galaxy and you can say Sounders, but really they're just fooling themselves. Those guys are going to play. When you have Obafemi Martin, who played for Inter, and his best time was playing for Inter, when that guy scored goals, I mean, it was like you blink and you miss it. I mean, the man was just, and he's just showing that now. Well, I think what Serie A shows, maybe Bradley could, you know, if I asked him that question, maybe he would agree. You know, it brings out a sense of quality. I mean, Serie A has a lot of quality, and a lot of people kind of repress that if they deny it. But Serie A has some of the best. You're not going to get a Maldini who can play, or Seedorf who plays for Milan and play till 35 years old, or the Buffon was playing. I mean, the conditioning is unbelievable. I mean, they should, you know, send guys over their coaches, staff, and stuff, and to see how Milan does it and how Inter does it. And these guys play forever because the conditioning is so good. And I think when you play for clubs, even smaller clubs, you know, the professionalism is unbelievable. Outside of not paying wages, but that's something totally different. I mean, that's economics, right? You know, you can go all day. It happens in China, happens in Bolivia, happens in all these leagues. So, go ahead, sir.
Well, I was just saying, like, I think we should wind it down. And I think that, like, my final takeaway when you're talking about those guys is that, obviously, in the context of the match that we're discussing, where it's just like, all right, well, that's right. Again, we've said it more than once. We don't need to get too far ahead of ourselves. But when you look at the ages of an Altidore, Jovinko, and Bradley, and if we just find a defender who's emerging into their prime, we're set,
right?
Because those can be that can be your anchor, that can be, you know, the heart of your club for 4 years. That's what we've sort of brought in right now. And of course the idea is that hopefully you don't need to spend 30 plus $50 million to do it in the future, but to get to sort of jumpstart how bad this team was, I don't disagree with it, to bring in guys that are sort of emerging into their prime years.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. On that note, Julian, I think we should wind it down. We're getting to that point where I think we should close it off. And we have the schedule ahead is, of course, the next game. We're away to Rail Salt Lake on March 29th, followed shortly thereafter by Chicago.
Yeah,
and it'll be a long time. May 10th, I think, is our home opener against Houston. So we just have to plug through this and hope that, you know, from game to game, that we sort of try to build off whatever the performance was like. And I think we discussed a lot of things in this podcast of what the team probably some small things they need to look at to tighten things up?
Well, the last two games, I mean, Orlando, I mean, you have Kaká, and let's be honest, you know, you can't, I mean, that's a team leader. So, I mean, everybody wants to play with this guy. So, I mean, you know, you got Chicago and Dallas. I think you have chances to, you know, make points and to gain leverage and to, you know, climb the ladder a little bit and just, you know, and fix. Yeah, I think everything's fixable with those two teams, Chicago and Dallas. I mean, you can make a mistake, and I don't necessarily think they'll make you pay for it. But Orlando has played well, and Philadelphia's been playing well, too. So, I don't know. I mean, and, you know, so, I mean, you could lose points there. So, I think anything that's not a loss right now is a good thing. I mean, you come to Toronto and you play Houston. Just having the last couple of them, they lost yesterday, but or 2 days ago. But they, you know, we'll see what happens. You know, I think Chicago, Dallas are definitely winnable games or draws. But I think Orlando and Philly will be definitely difficult. The way I've seen Philadelphia play the last two games, just on highlights, is shows. I think their strengths are getting better. You know, so you don't want to. I mean, you want to. I think you want to break even in those two games. A win is the best. But I think if you lose more ground now, it's going to be hard to get. And everybody knows that on the road is tough. So.
Yeah. So on that note, Julian, thanks a lot for coming on the podcast. I really appreciate it.
It was my pleasure. Thank you for having
and your,
me again.
And your little, you know, the history there of.
Oh, I hope it was.
Your history
it was
of following. So yeah, I thought that was interesting. Are you on Twitter? Can anyone like connect with you somehow?
No. I have Instagram, but no, I don't have Twitter. I'm not like Steve Perry. I'm not in the woods, but I'm not.
You're kind of halfway.
I kind of have 1 foot in the door, but no, I don't have you can, I don't. I'm sorry.
Okay, well then people can find me. If you have any beef with what Julian sends podcast, then you can.
If you have any beef, any Romanistas have any beef with me, go through.
Right. At Clark RNO on Twitter, or you can email at info@rednationonline.ca. We might be back next weekend, actually. I'll connect with Kamal Hilton and Aaron Nielsen. We're thinking about maybe checking out that TFC2 game. The first game of their season kicks off to see how those guys do. And then we'll see what happens after that. So on that note, thanks again, Julian, for being on the podcast.
My pleasure.
And thank you for listening. Any questions or anything like that, just reach out and let us know. And we'll catch you guys either next week or the week after. Thanks a lot. Eastside Stand Up is the only Toronto FC podcast breaking down the game right after it happens. We want you to get involved. Reach out to us on Twitter @RedNationOnline or by email at info or have your say @RedNationOnline.ca. Get in touch with us. Let us know how you thought the team did. Agree, disagree. It doesn't matter. Also, check out our other podcasts on Red Nation Online, From the Black Hole, Ours is the Fury, The Footy Roundup, and our interview series. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you guys next time.